There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 693. We are very excited to be performing at San Diego Comic-Con this year. Oh my god, there's going to be so much stuff. I'm moderating a bunch of panels, and we're doing two live podcasts at Balboa Theater Saturday night, and I'm doing stand-up Friday night, and there'll be some special guests there, and some special guests at the podcast, and then Nerdist is doing a thing, which we'll announce soon, and we're having our own panel. And basically, I'm not going to sleep for like 4 or 5 days, but it's always worth it. If you want tickets to the shows, to the stand-up shows, and to the podcast shows, go to funcomfortabletour.com. Some other stuff happening in the Nerdist Community Corkboard. The Nerdist School. So if you want to learn sketch, improv, whatever, come to the Nerdist School. It's located next to our Nerdist showroom right there at Meltdown Comics. There are two level one classes currently open, as well as a level one musical improv class for the melodically inclined. If you've been doing improv for a long time, then you also just cannot. It's such a little community that it just sprang up. It was just like we planted some seeds and it just sprang up. I'm so proud of the Nerdist School. I'm so proud of it. So go to nerdist.com/school to get info. And you're not just taking classes, you're becoming a part of the community, and we'd love to have you there. Also, two listeners, Kim and Jody, made a book called The Little Book of Disorders. Kim writes, "I use my personal experiences to create a book filled with illustrations and pop culture references that makes disorders easy to understand. With the help of a few professionals, it offers a way to talk about them with loved ones. Find more info at littledisorders.com. This episode is Janet Montgomery, who is essentially the queen of the witches. Essentially the queen of the witches. I started watching Salem last year. I love the show. It's super fun. We're into season two right now. As you may know, Shane West, a.k.a. John Alden, was on a couple weeks ago, and he was awesome. And Jenna Montgomery is awesome. And she was also in an episode of Black Mirror that was real good. So Salem is on Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN. So here's the Nerdist Podcast, number 693. With the British, Janet Montgomery. Katie, roll the thing!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Do.
It sounded dirty when you said it that way.
You want a little cream in your Americana?
You make him say it like that. You're like,
I do,
you
I coffee, do. Like, Kyle, unbutton your shirt slowly and then ask me if I want any cream in my coffee.
And say cream.
Cream.
In your coffee.
Do you want any cream
in your coffee?
I'm Chris. This is Matt. That's Katie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are
I'm
you?
I'm so excited that you're on because at the same period, we already started recording, by the way. And you can swear, say whatever you want.
Oh, good. Fuck you. No, yeah.
Kidding. Well done. Well done.
She's doing it.
Hey.
The same time at the end of last year that my girlfriend and I started watching Salem, a friend of mine at BBC also sent me the Christmas episode of Black Mirror, which was amazing and also utterly heartbreaking.
Thank you so much.
At the same time.
Oh, I'm so glad you saw it because a lot of people in America haven't seen it.
No.
But they're fans of the show because they've seen it on Netflix. So I feel like no one's seen the Christmas special here yet.
Did they put the Christmas special on Netflix yet?
No, they haven't.
I don't know. I've been illegally downloading it, so.
Wait,
smart.
Well, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, if they're gonna geoblock things.
I don't make residuals on that. That's fine. Go ahead.
No, yeah. Fucking downloaded that shit. I'm not gonna.
No, we've been extolling the virtues of Black Mirror for quite a while now.
Yeah, and Charlie Brooker is an awesome writer.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's absolutely amazing.
What was your favorite episode of it?
The Christmas episode I loved because it was so sad.
And I mean, Rafe Spall, who's in it, is fantastic actor
as
well.
Yes, yeah. My favorite episode. I don't know. They're all sort of, I mean.
I like the first one.
The first one is so shocking. Me too.
Just like out of left field, you're like, you're not sure what you're going to watch because you're watching the first episode.
And it left me feeling so uncomfortable for days. Like the whole, like the Prime Minister fucking a pig on TV. It was like he was in such a conundrum. I was like, I don't know what I would do either. Like, he's got to save this girl's life.
Well, I mean, I guess you gotta fuck the pig
to do it. Yes. You just gotta man up and fuck the pig, right?
And how specific the instructions were for how, I mean, without spoiling too much, he fucks a pig, and then and then some other stuff happens. But I think just the idea that there's this kind of like dystopian technocracy that's, I don't know how else to describe it. It's just, it's all part of one world. And but I also loved I think the most heartbreaking episode was the one where he's replaying like with his
that was with Toby Kebbell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that one was one of those ones where afterwards you just need a minute after the episode to feel okay again. And
he rips it out.
That's what cigarettes are for, bro.
What?
That's what cigarettes are for.
Smoke.
You just go out, smoke a cigarette, you're good.
You know what's weird is that in my dreams,
yeah,
I've been smoking for like 2.5 decades. Like
good
in
for
my
you.
In my dreams, I smoke in my dreams. And I'm
what
like,
do you smoke?
Cigarettes, just cigarettes. Why have I been doing this for 20 some years? And
well, when did you quit?
Oh, like 12 years ago.
Maybe your subconscious hasn't caught up to your conscious.
Maybe it's because I think it's symbolic of something that's more about destructive choices.
Interesting.
And then it's more of like, why am I continuing to do things? You know, like, why do I make destructive choices that I know are bad for me? I don't think it's really about smoking at all. It's too literal.
But you only do it in your dreams.
It's
in real life,
dreams.
You're like not destructive at all.
Well, I think
you dream of being more destructive.
I think I have destructive tendencies, but in general, I don't. I was destructive when I was young, but I don't think I am anymore. Are you?
I mean, I feel like someone who's destructive often can't see it themselves, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask. You should probably ask, like, my mother or, like, my best friend. They would probably describe me as destructive. I just feel like I'm free-spirited.
Free-spirited. Okay? That sounds like a younger person's way of describing destructive. I just like to have fun, you know? I just roll with it.
Or an old German swinger.
Yeah.
I'm just a lover, just not a fighter, you know?
You know, it's just a free spirit. I just like to have fun.
Well, you're in Shreveport most of the time.
Yeah.
Because Shane was on last week, and he was...
It's his birthday today, and I have to say happy birthday, Shane.
Happy birthday, Shane. When this goes up, this will not be his birthday, so we hope
we'll
you
just
had
hold
a
until next year.
Wonderful
birthday. Doesn't matter.
He was super nice. I get the sense that the people on that your cast seems super, super nice. Super chill.
I mean, they're amazing. Everyone in the cast gets along so well. And I feel like we're all in Shreveport together. Everyone's away from home. So you all do things together more than if you live in New York or LA or London, because you have your own lives to go home to. But we're all just like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Should we like, should we go to the one restaurant that we all go to again? And
you're my friend group. Do you understand?
Yeah, we've become sort of like a weird Shreveport family.
Because I see, I think I saw the guy who plays Cotton Mather at
Seth Gable, yeah,
at the Jurassic World premiere last night. But I wasn't.
His wife was in it, so he was there.
Oh,
yeah,
who's his wife?
Bryce Dallas Howard.
That's his wife.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
I know. How did he get her? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Seth. You know I'm kidding.
He's got that boyish charm.
Yeah, it's he's amazing.
If he's just secretly a huge fan of Happy Days, just trying to get close to Ron.
Just trying to get closer to Ron Howard. Hey, does your dad still talk about and I wanted to go up to him and be like, I really love Salem, but I didn't because I don't.
Why compliment someone? Yeah.
It's not like compliment
Yeah,
someone.
We hate to hear that. I just hate it when people love us or love our show. It's like, oh, go away. Like, this happens all the time.
I'm just self-conscious about it.
Listen, he's there. It's his wife's big night. Of course he's going to want to hear someone like something he does.
Yeah.
No, but I just...
You really should have gone up to him, man. That's a real faux pas.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you why. Because I play it out in my head and I go, well, here's how this would go down. Hey, man, I'm a really big fan of your show. Thanks. good night. Like, I just feel like it's just sort of an awkward.
Yeah, but that's still a fine exchange.
No, see, I think I would be more like that because I never know what to say. But Seth would be so great. If you went up and you said, hey, I really like you, your show, and love you on it, he would, like, get into a great conversation with you about it. He's so good at that. He should be on this show and not me, to be honest.
You know what's interesting is that he's married to Bryce Dallas Howard, and he seems to be obsessed with redheads on Salem.
With Tamsin, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it goes back to the wrong
Who isn't
Howard
even
thing.
A real redhead, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's blonde, but it really suits her,
she
the red
hair.
She
looks like a ginger.
I know.
It totally Crazy. Works. Well, not only her, but then the girl he was seeing in the first season.
Gloriana.
That gets banished.
The whore, yeah.
Yeah,
Gloriana.
She is literally a whore. It's okay to say she's a whore.
It's okay. That's what she plays. She's a whore.
She is absolutely a whore in that thing. How did you come to the project? Did you just audition for it, or had they seen you in something, or what was the...
I was in London at the time, living in London, and Brannon Braga was also in London. He's the show creator working on Cosmos, and he organized sort of like a meeting with me to talk to me about the project. And then from there, I didn't fly out to LA to like test or anything. I just did an audition. And then about 4 months later, they were like, hey, you got the job. I was like, oh, what job?
Yeah, I don't know. What are you talking about?
I feel like it has to go through so many people that it takes forever and you forget about things. And I was like working on something else in Canada, and then it came back around, and suddenly I was in 1600 Salem, but in Shreveport.
You know, I always feel especially it's hard not to watch the show and go, oh my God, she had to be in that crazy dress traipsing through the mud all day.
I'm so glad you watch the show and you think about things like that.
I do. Your costumes are so, Mary Sibley's costumes are so intricate. Your wardrobe is so intricate. But most of the thing, you're basically stepping over plague bodies and mud. And it just seems like, I wonder if that was fun to shoot that day. Like it looks like it's a little bit of a...
I mean, it's probably not fun if I'm like traipsing through the crags in a massive dress. But there was a funny moment last year when we were doing episode 13, which was like an intense episode, and I was really tired. It was about 2 a.m, and I was doing a scene with Isaac, mm-hmm. who's Ido Goldberg, and I had these long necklaces on, and they got caught on the arm of the chair as I stood up, and so I was like, and I ended up like going, like screaming a little bit, and it was awful. I mean, the whole crew just laughed at me, but I got so frustrated because I have so many pieces that I have to be like very careful all the time, but then I'm asked to like, you know, fight with someone or like do a spell. I'm like, guys, like I can't even move right now. Look how much I have on me.
Real witches probably weren't in completely intricate traipsy like jewelry, right? Right? I mean, you need your...
I mean, maybe they would take it off, you know? Maybe they would take it all off first. I always feel like when Mary does her magic, I always like her to be with all of it off. Like, I feel like the Mary Sibley that Salem see and know is like the Puritan Mary Sibley is very grand.
Yeah.
But I think like the witch Mary is like very earthy, and she wants to just get in a nightgown or get naked and stick a toad in someone's mouth. She's very earthy.
You've done a good job. You guys have done a good job of making you side with the witches and making you want to light up all the Puritans, basically.
I know. We've been lucky to have some very unlikable Puritans, like especially Jeremy this year. Like, you love to hate him. You know, like Jeremy Crutchley, he's like, he plays Hawthorne, and he's just such an asshole that you're like, oh, just kill him, Mary.
And last season was Increase Mather,
yeah.
Who was just a dick. You know, it's funny, I thought Cotton was going to end up being the dick of the series, and then there was a mega dick being his father, and then you start to like Cotton.
You start to feel sorry for Cotton. I think that's what's so great about the writing is... You feel one way about a character, and it can turn on a dime once you see it. I kind of felt like it when I watched The Jinx with Bob Durst, because I felt like they led it up to it with like his mom, like watching his mom like kill herself and stuff, and you feel sorry for him, and then you're like, you have to remember the things he's done, but it's like people are more complicated than that.
What'd you do? Shoved a frog in a man's mouth. That's what you did.
And I did it for a reason. I
you
had to keep
very,
him quiet.
You had a very good reason. Well, there's also the whole, I mean, you know, the sort of like rampant socially accepted sexism of like, well, you can't own property if you're a woman, and you have your place is tied to the husband. So of course you would have to do that.
Yeah, and as a woman in this age, even just hearing a man say that, knowing it's acting, like my blood boils.
Of course.
And so it's kind of easy actually to play Mary, because she's sort of like how I would feel.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
I would love to find out what the something that I'm never 100% clear on is what the rules of the magic is, what the rules are within the world, because sometimes it just seems like, oh, why don't you just light that guy up with fire? Like, you're a witch. Why don't you just like that, you know?
Yeah, sometimes I find out I have powers that I didn't even know I had, and I'm like, hey, guys, I didn't know I could do this. Why didn't I just do that in the last episode? Like, that would have made things easier. I feel like the magic, you know, they keep it very grounded, but then there are things like with the fire that was coming out, which came from like Mary's progressing magically. So I think we have to accept that her powers are going to get stronger with like the Grand Rite being nearly complete.
Right.
Complete now.
Right.
It's complete.
I'm two episodes into the next season. Which, because I'm behind on everything, but I'm two episodes.
It's just
in the
not good
season.
Enough, Chris.
So it's not. Sorry,
I'm kidding.
Right. Flog.
I'm kidding.
But I have seen the introduction of Lucy Lawless.
Yes.
As another, without giving too much away, as another force of nature to contend with. It seems. I mean, it's obvious that there's all this. There seems to be this chess game of witchcraft that's happening right now in and around Salem, and there's a lot of different pieces sort of moving.
Yeah, this is like the season of the witch war is what they called it, and I think that there's these, you go throughout the season and Mary definitely doesn't see all the threats that are around her, and who you think the witch war might be with, like Mercy, or it might be with Anne. You don't know where the threat's coming from, and I think that's pretty exciting.
Are we supposed to like Mary, do you think?
Honestly, I mean, I like her, but I sort of have to because I play her. I feel like sometimes you like her and sometimes you think, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
I feel like she's one of those characters. She's a really well-written character because you don't know how you feel about her, but you can't help but sympathize with her. It's like she's a survivor.
Right.
And she's scrambled her way to where she is and she just keeps surviving. I think you can't help but admire that in someone.
So when you said they found you in London, where did you come from? What did you do? Like, what was your path?
Oh gosh.
Start from the beginning, day zero.
Okay. Well, I was born to my mother, Anne. She had me, and I had an older sister. I grew up in Bournemouth. Then when I was 16, I went a little crazy. I was like, I'm moving out.
Free spirit.
I'm leaving school. So I did that. I did those things. But I always danced. So I got a scholarship to a ballet school in London. And my parents didn't want me to go. And I was like, well, I'm going to go. And then I paid for my living. I lived in London, paid for like my living and stuff. I worked at Pizza Hut for 3 years.
Nice.
Pizza Hut.
Were you dancing pizzas to people's homes?
I was not, but okay. I just did a lot of children's parties there. It's a little different in England. It's a little bit more of a restaurant in England.
Oh, okay. Oh, you did children's parties? Oh, okay.
Pizza Hut for 3 years.
Pizza Hut hires dancers in England?
No, I was a waitress, but like I would just be like, they just hire like fun people, you know? Like,
gotcha.
They like actors and
gotcha.
And dancers and people that just don't work a lot. So
gotcha.
I did notice that about Pizza Hut when I was in London.
Characters.
I was like, that looks nothing like Pizza Hut back home.
Yeah, it's kind of fancier in England,
yeah,
right?
It is.
Yeah, Pizza Hut here is just feels like kind of like you just grab a pizza.
Yeah.
But in London, it's like, come to the salad bar and sit down.
I also was like thrilled with the Subway having 3-pound footlongs. Instead of $5, I was like, conversion's okay. I'm into it.
So you worked at Pizza Hut for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. As I was going, and I graduated dance school. And then when I left, I was like, oh, I don't really know if I'm going to be a dancer or that's what I want to do. And then I started working in theater, doing like musical kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I produced a play and that I was in with a guy called Gethin Antony, who was in the first few seasons of Game of Thrones. He's a great actor. And I got an agent and then I worked a little bit in England and then came out to America. I'm just going to go out there and see what it's like. And then I didn't really seem to leave. Like I moved back to England, but I work more over here. It just sort of suits me, I guess.
I mean, it does seem like England has if you can start working in the machine in England, it just feels like it's like that you see the same people appear and stuff over
yes.
and over and over and over.
Yeah,
and over
it's a tight knit network. Whereas it's one of the things that I do like about America is that they see everyone and they give everyone a chance. Whereas in England, they're like, we see like three people and we don't want to give everyone a chance. It's more of like, it's a different culture. And I love that, like, anyone can go, I'm going to move to LA and they can kind of get a chance to go to an audition and stuff. Whereas
right.
in England, you just can't in the same way.
Does Salem air in England?
Not yet, no.
Really?
But it does in like Germany. And when I was in Paris last year, like there was a guy that was like, I'm such a big fan of the show. And I was like, it's so weird that I'm in Paris and this guy watches Salem. Because in England, no, like it's not on.
And do you think it's... Like, where do you think you... Or do you just want to work wherever you find jobs that you like? Or do you think, like, I'd be really cool to work a ton in America, or I'd be kind of cool to go back home and be in a bunch of stuff there?
Well, like, right now, it's just me and my dog. So, definitely, like, I like to work... I mean, I have, like, my friends and everything, but in London, it's always nice to work there because I've got, like, some good friends there and I'm closer to my family. Mm-hmm. In LA, it's nice because I've got friends here since I moved here when I was, like, 23. New York, I love. But, like, I kind of just... choose it from the scripts, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and the parts I'll go anywhere. Like, I'll try it out once, you know? Like, I was like, Shreveport, I've never been. I guess I'll go. Mm. Why not?
And what do you do in the... I assume you're waiting to find out if... Do you know if there's going to be a season three yet?
No, I've not been tired. I don't know. Do you?
No.
Well, then no.
I'll make a call.
I don't know.
So, are you basically... Do you have to wait until you find out, or can you... audition for other stuff, or are there other things you're working on? Or?
Well, there's like I do audition for other stuff, like because we work like 6 months, and I get 6 months off. Mm-hmm. I tend to do other, like I did Black Mirror
right
last year, and I did a movie with Jason Biggs, which hopefully will go to Toronto. They're hoping it's like a comedy movie. But this year, like I'm just reading scripts. I've been to a few auditions. I wasn't very good in them. It takes me a while to get back into the whole auditioning thing again.
Why do you think you weren't good in the auditions?
Because I'm still Mary Sibley right now a little bit. And I'm like, oh, you want a light, bubbly girl from New York? I don't know if I've got that in me right now. I feel like I'm still just Mary Sibley. It'll take me like a month to probably shake her.
I will tear you asunder. Yeah. No, this girl's fun. She's supposed to be fun.
And I'm like crying, tears streaming down my face. I'm like, oh, I understand. I get it. Yeah, fun.
I had to sacrifice my baby in a forest. No, I think you're bringing some other things to this.
Oh, that you.
I mean, do you ever think about overall the type of, like, the direction that you want to go in? Or do you sort of work job to job? I mean, do you have a grand plan? What do you see?
You know, it's an interesting question because I think I flip between – I don't really know because I think I've learned on the job a lot. You know, like I've kind of progressed in my career. And as you go on, I'm learning the things that I don't want to do and the things that I am attracted to. Like I'm definitely attracted to like good writing, but it's hard to find actually.
Sure.
And it's a challenge as an actor to put your trust in like new writers or like new directors. I do like working in television because I like – watching a character grow, and I like the community and like feeling like I have a stable job, and I watch more television than I do movies now as well. Like there's so few movies that I want to go see. They're often like old ones. I watch old movies.
Sure.
So yeah, but television's different. I'm loving so much television now.
Film also moves glacially. I mean it
yeah, like you film it like 2 years ago and you're like, oh, now I'm promoting it. Like who can remember what they were doing 2 years ago? Not me.
What was your motivation? I don't know.
Stop asking me questions.
I barely remember that I did this. I wonder if you are, if you're a free spirit, can you have a grand plan? Or do you feel like that having the structure of a television schedule has sort of made you more of a regimented individual?
No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe it is good for me in some ways. I think I've started to see that unabashedly I like making money and I like working. When I'm not working, I sort of feel like an empty vessel.
Right.
And maybe that's because I'm not like married with kids or anything, but I sort of feel a bit kind of empty, like I'm not doing anything in the world. But whereas when I'm creating something or working on something, even if I'm like, oh, I kind of wish it was a Fincher movie or whatever, I can still feel like I'm doing something and it makes me feel like I have a purpose.
By the way, I still think even if you had, yeah, if you, even like if you were married with kids, you could still feel empty. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah, I'm sure.
I think particularly in this business, it's so, there's so much having to deal with idle, like what, you know, when your mind is active, but you don't have an outlet for it, particularly acting. It's not like you can go, I'm just going to swing by the acting gym and do some acting squat. Like, you can't just go do the thing that you do until someone says, okay, now you can do the thing that you do.
Yeah, I started working with this great acting coach, Martin Ledwith, like 2 years ago. And he's with me out in Shreveport and works with me. And he also works with a couple of the other cast members, but mainly with me. And he changed like my whole process of acting in such a way that I really enjoy the work. Like, the work is so gratifying. Like, going through the scripts, like, doing my kind of, like, breakdown of the characters and each script. And I'm a nightmare for writers because I notice, like, any mistake, like, I'm on it. But that's all part of it for me. And I think that makes me feel like I'm not just rocking up, like, well, it might work, it might not. Like, I like to prep and, like, have some technique for how I'm going to do things.
The downtime is the worst because I feel like that's when... that's when people do the worst thing that they do, which is to take stock of the rest of their life. It's like, no, if you're already in a depleted state, don't start taking on all the big ticket items at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the dangerous spiral that mm-hmm. can happen.
Yeah.
So do you experience that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've just got to LA and I'm like, okay, shall I buy a place in LA? Like, I've just got here and I'm like looking at places to buy, but I'm also looking at rentals. But it's like, I have to figure out I have to figure out real life stuff now. Like, where am I going to live? You know, it all becomes very overwhelming when you've been in a bubble playing a character, just like every decision's kind of decided for you. You're like, what time am I going to work tomorrow? 5:30. Okay.
Right.
You know, and you're like, well, I'm stuck here until the end of May before I can figure out real life stuff. But I'm sure I can just get another job and then I won't have to deal with my own life again. That's my real plan. And like, just please, like, let me do something else and then I don't have to deal with my own life.
Is that the Janet Montgomery autobiography, Putting Off My Life?
Yes, I think that's definitely what for the last 3 years, yes.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It is, by the way, I think it's a good time to buy. It's a decent time to buy a house.
I hear that, but it's so expensive. It's an expensive time to buy a house,
it's an expensive,
right?
Well, here.
It's an expensive time to buy a house here. It's also a little tricky because my mom's a real estate agent, so I hear about this stuff all the time. But I bought a house a couple of years ago, but you have a lot because the market's recovered, and so you have a lot of foreign investors coming in and literally just paying cash for shit, and
you can't
compete with that.
Yeah.
So it is a little tricky, but if you can find a place, it's good because the rates are continuing to go up, and you can always rent it if you go away somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that was my issue, is like, I think I've been living like a gypsy because I go to Shreveport, I carry like 5 suitcases and I've got like a couple of boxes of stuff with me. But I don't really have like a home at the moment. Like, I just like, I go to Shreveport 6 months out of the year, and the rest of the time I'm like, I'll go to LA for a few months and maybe I'll go to New York, go back to London. But I kind of need a place for my shit now. You know, I'm like, even if I'm gonna go away and like waste money when I go back to Shreveport, I think it's time. Like, I'm 29 years old, I should probably like think about maybe having a real home.
Have you acquired a bunch of shit yet, or are you still, is it because you haven't been able to plant any roots, you don't have a ton?
I just don't really care about shit for longer than like a month. Mm-hmm. So like, I'll love something and then I'll be like, I can easily throw things away. Like, if someone went and stole my 3 suitcases right now, I'd be like, oh, thank God, because then I just have to like I don't have to empty them. Like, I just have to buy new stuff.
I just went through the process. I moved into a house. I spent a couple of years remodeling a house, and I moved into it mid last year, and I had nothing. I had a mattress, and like, I bought 2 bean bags to sleep on, and then
He also had an Xbox.
I had an Xbox,
obviously,
and a TV. Okay, I had an Xbox that connected to the TV, and I spent 7 or 8 months, and I'm just kind of now finishing amassing all of the stuff that makes up the house, and it's really fun. Getting the stuff is really fun.
Is it fun or is it like annoying?
No.
Are you like looking at different spoons in Bed Bath & Beyond, like, how do I choose which one? Because that's me. I'm like, I can't choose a rug. It takes me like 4 years because I'm like, I don't want to commit to it in case it's not the right color. Like,
okay, this is very interesting. I feel like I'm starting to see a little bit of the Matrix code behind
this. Is like
Janet
therapy,
Montgomery.
Isn't it?
Kind of.
This, I feel like I'm sat with my therapist right now.
Kind of. Listen, I'm not, and at any time you can tell me to go fuck myself, and I will comply. Maybe not literally. Well, not now.
I would love to see that.
I don't know if you would. So
makes one of us.
But so far, it's interesting to hear, you know, you use the word gypsy, so you kind of lead this nomadic lifestyle, and you're like, well, I don't want to, like, kids and man, but I don't want to be tied down, and I just kind of like this other people saying to show up, and then you say, like, I don't, about the commitment of buying spoons.
Yeah.
So what do you think – What do you think that is? Like, what do you think that mechanism is?
I guess I'm a dude.
Welcome to Analacris.
Yeah. I don't know.
No, I'm curious. You know, like, and believe me, if this gets too, if I'm prying too much, I'm not. But I'm just so interested to hear, because I am a dude, but I don't feel like I think that way.
You know what it is then? I think it's interesting you asked what I want for my career in the future. I'm still sort of deciding, I think, and... how, you know, where I've come from, that it means that there's so much, and now I have so many options almost, that it's like I can't commit to anything because I'm figuring out exactly what will make me happy, because I feel like the next sort of step will be like the one that I'd like settle in, hopefully.
Yeah, I think there's almost a mythology to that, where people go like, because you know, I have a house and I've owned a couple places, but then when I meet people who haven't bought a house yet, they're like, I just don't know if I can commit to the next 30 years. And I go, yeah, but you could sell it. You know, like I don't think it's necessarily the permanent.
It's like a 4.5-5-year commitment.
But it's quite stressful. Like the whole process of like buying a house and then like having a mortgage. Like I have a mortgage in England on a flat that I bought in London. I still don't understand the mortgage, and I never will. And I'm just like, oh, it's so stressful.
But yours is weird because the Queen owns it and you got to rent it from her, and it's not the same.
So it's so stressful.
Yeah.
Is it much easier here?
Yeah. You don't. I don't. Am I correct about this? Do you can? Are you? You don't necessarily. You don't literally own the property in London. Like you, the Queen. Like the Queen owns the property, and you like rent it from the.
Well, I think there are certain parts of London like that, and I'm not sure who. Mine's owned by like the council, but I lease it from like the London Council.
Right.
So I have like a 100-year lease on my place.
Right. Well,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So if I last 100 years, then otherwise, I guess you just pass it down, or
right.
Then after 100 years, they're like, we're taking it back now.
Yeah, there's something weird where you don't. Wow. Yeah, there's something because I had a friend whose family had a. They're like, oh, you know, he bought a place and. He bought a flat in London. I mean, you know, and then made the joke like, I mean, he's leasing it for 100 years. I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh, well, you have to lease it.
Yeah, but who cares? Do you plan on living more than 100 years? And then you think, oh, dude,
yes.
You don't want spoiled kids that are just like inheriting stuff from you. It's good. It's like, you know what? This is for 100 years in case I lived a really long time, but you ain't getting none of it.
Yeah, if I ever have kids someday and then like right as I'm dying, I'm going to be like, I sold everything. And what are you going to do about it? But the there is It's almost like I feel like people say they want options, but I feel like a lot of times people really don't want options because the there's stress, you know, there are diminishing returns when sort of like what you said, like, well, which spoon is better? I don't know. This one has merits and this one has merits. And you almost become inactive because of choice.
And I think that's why maybe I love to work so much, because it limits my choice. It's like, well, I can't because I have to go to work and I have to move here to do this. For me, I think of just the way my life is set up right now is when I'm not working, I can really do whatever I want. Like I could just go away traveling for a month. I don't know. I just sit on Facebook. So I can do whatever I want and I choose to do nothing.
I'll tell you why picking stuff is fun. I thought it was going to be stressful too. And then I discovered that I have with each piece that I would buy, I discovered that I have a very specific thing that I like. And I didn't know that about. I didn't really know that about myself before. So there is like a weird piece of self-discovery because you're seeing your desires and pieces of your psyche manifested in the real world by the objects that you surround yourself with.
Okay, so are you like a comfort guy, or are you like, is there some sort of like Danish modern thing you like? What is your thing?
I discovered my thing, and I came up with a name for it.
What is it?
Cheap and
cheerful.
No, not at all. The opposite. It's literally the opposite.
Oh, is it?
My design aesthetic is a Victorian gentleman serial killer.
Ooh.
My house is full of antique, like really old stuff and taxidermy and old science equipment and all sorts of weird shit like that.
That sounds like Brandon Braga's house as well, who created the show. He has like red velvet curtains as well, which I'm like, well, this is very like... antique-y,
yeah.
And like gentlemany.
Yes.
Like a guy like with red velvet curtains, you're like, this guy means business.
Business.
Or he's Dracula.
Yeah. He might be Dracula. Have you seen him in the daylight?
I have, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, daywalker. He's a daywalker. But I just went to Austria and bought. There's great. There's antique. There's legitimate antiques there. I feel like all of our antiques.
And did you ship them?
I did. I bought a wardrobe with this from like 1750. It had this like hand painted panels on it, and it's unbelievable.
But was it expensive to ship?
Yes. I mean, it was probably like. Well, I don't know. I mean, it was like $1,000 to ship it. So, I mean, expensive, yes. Yeah. But considering the size of it, yeah. I sort of felt like – I just sort of – in my brain, I was like, well, that's just part of the purchase
Plus,
price.
Plus, if that was for sale over here, it would cost
It would be twice. Yeah. If yeah. it were here, it would be twice what it was over yeah. there. So when you're on the road or when you're – you know, when you're here in L.A. and you're traveling around, you said you have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Is he your home base? Like, is he your little piece of home that
yes.
makes you feel home wherever you are?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't take him to Shreveport the first season because I didn't really know if it was going to be too hot in Louisiana for him. And he's like an English bulldog. And it was all quite sudden that I was suddenly like moving to Shreveport. So I left him with my stepdad in England. And that's the longest, that was 5 months away from him. And that's the longest I've been away from him since he was 3 months. And I hate it. Like, I love having him with me.
Can you just plop him back and forth between England now, or do you have to quarantine
yeah,
him?
Yeah, no, I can. He comes back and forth with me because they changed the law in 2013. And now if you're from, like, Canada, America, I think maybe Australia as well, then you can take your dog to a vet and get them checked for rabies, an accredited vet, and then just get a stamp. And then when you come out, as long as they're like an accredited vet, they know they don't have rabies. It's certain approved countries.
Do you travel?
It's like a free dog agreement.
Do you travel with him? Does he just sit up in the front in the plane with you?
Yeah, he sits between my legs, like on the plane. I mean, he's massive. He's like 55 pounds.
Oh, Jesus. Really?
So, yeah, I don't get to do the whole like carry my dog in a bag thing or anything like that. But it's hard in airports with him because I have to like carry him on a lead through the airport. And everyone's like, oh, and I'm like, service dog. It's for my anxiety. Don't make me anxious.
Please. I think you should dress like Mary Sibley and then just lead the dog on
a fancy. I want him on the show. Are you kidding? I keep asking them, but I don't think there's... I mean, I would like him to be my new familiar.
The frog is your familiar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you just have a big bulldog instead.
I think you could have a bulldog.
Why not?
You could turn you're a witch. You could turn the frog into a bulldog.
I'm going to get on it.
There's no reason that couldn't happen. If Brandon ever says, like, well, why go witchcraft? I'm a fucking witch.
Make it happen.
You know?
Yeah.
Mary's a, you know, like, she's a free-spirited lady. She wants, one day she'll want a frog, the next day she wants an English bulldog to shove down someone's throat. Well, I think that's, I flew back from, where was I? D.C. I was just in D.C. And there was a couple across the aisle from me that had their cat with them. And the reason I knew they had a cat was because right as we were about to take off, there was this no one knew they had a cat under their seat. And all of a sudden there was a chilling, you know, that when a cat's really upset, the cat for a third of the flight. And it was more off-putting than a baby because the animal sounded evil and distressed. Oh. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, no, I'm quite lucky with my dog because he doesn't – I mean, he farts a lot on the plane, but you can't smell it as bad in the plane. So I'm like, I hope that person next to me doesn't. And he slobbers and drools and pants a lot. But once they start the engines, you can't hear it. So I'm like, yes.
Was you saying that a sly justification so that you could blame –
So I could blame on my dog,
yes,
yeah. That's why I got an English bulldog, because I was like, I got to get something that's believable that he farts all the time.
There are – I've had a number of secret farters on planes lately. Where you just...
But you can't really... I feel like I wouldn't know if someone farted next to me on a plane. You can... It's bad?
Yeah, I've had a couple that are bad. And
you think it's the flight attendants?
I don't think it's the... No, they're not crop dusting up and down the aisle. I just think it's... that made you giggle, Katie? It's very hard to crack her, so... It is. But trying to figure out... Like, I was kind of doing this... this personality math in my head with everyone in the vicinity and trying to figure out who might be the culpable person who was doing it.
But how? But they would have to be in quite a close proximity, no?
Yeah, but it could be
two people in
two
front
people here, and then there's yeah. five people. It could be.
Who did you end up choosing? Like, what are the male or female?
It was I think it was an older male sitting in front of me.
Yeah,
but. Also, if you're a younger female, it's the perfect crime because everyone's going to think it's the older dude.
Of course, yeah.
Or the bulldog.
Yeah. I'd be like, oh, awkward. Well, so obviously it wasn't me.
He's flying makes him very nervous. What's his name?
Guthrie.
Guthrie.
Yeah.
That's a good dog name.
That's a great dog name.
I like that.
Did you live in New York with him?
Yeah. Yeah, I did a show in New York and we lived there for 6 months.
I always feel like owning a dog in New York is trickier because it just feels like it doesn't. I'm sure people who have dogs in New York would disagree, but it doesn't feel like a dog-friendly town when everything is a concrete city block.
I mean, LA is the most dog-friendly place I've ever been, and it's like a perfect place to have a dog. Shreveport wasn't great because you can't let them off in parks. Like, there's no dog park. There's not one dog park in the whole of Shreveport, so you have to always keep them on a lead, mm-hmm. except for when I take him to set, and then he just wanders around. But, like New York, there are dog parks. But it's not as easy to get around. Like, no one really drives in New York. You're getting cabs, and you've got to get someone who's going to take you and your slobbery dog, or you've got to live near one of like the four dog parks.
And are you going to get him a buddy?
I don't think I could get away with having two service dogs for anxiety on a plane, to be honest.
I'm very anxious.
I mean, I already feel like it's tough with like my massive bulldog, and people look at me like. Yeah, right.
We all know.
I know.
That's not your service dog.
Well, he is. He is. He services me, like, with my anxiety.
Oh. Are you an anxious flyer?
I know this is a popular show. My doctor's going to, like, next time I go to American Airlines, they're going to be like, good luck.
I heard you on a podcast, and this is bullshit.
Dog, yeah, and they completely call me out.
Also, stop farting on planes. What was it that made you, I mean... Did you adopt him or was it like, I want to find a bulldog? How did you guys?
I adopted him. Yeah. There was a friend of mine, ended up not being, he got this puppy and he was like 2 months old. And he ended up going to a rehab.
Uh-huh.
So he asked me to rehome the dog for him. And I was like, I can't have a dog. Like, I would never make that kind of commitment. I'm like, oh, dog, got to find a new home for this dog.
But I thought rug choosing was bad.
I was like, why are you barking at me all the time? Just chill out.
What?
It was always an issue. But then after like 2 weeks, I just fell in love with him. And like, I'm so glad I did because it's nice having that responsibility. Like, I like wanting to get home to my dog.
So it's possible that things in life that we might normally be afraid of, we just adjust to.
Yes. I think most people are afraid of change in any way or like sort of sacrificing their freedom. But then sometimes it works. You know, I love having a dog.
And I,
a boyfriend, not so much, but a dog is great.
Relationships are tricky. Mm. Relationships are tricky, especially if you are a performer who travels a lot.
Mm.
Because, you know, the craziest thing about being a performer is that other performers... People who aren't performers, it can be challenging because they don't understand. They don't really understand exactly what you do, and that you keep weird hours, and that you have to travel a lot. But then people who are performers, you know, we're a kooky bunch.
Yeah,
everyone's got some wacky baggage.
No,
and then
perfect.
If you go with another performer, it's like, when are you ever going to see each other?
Right.
Like if you're always like traveling, it's like.
Unless you're both London actors and then you're just in
and
the same.
And you work
the same. You do every ridiculous upstairs, downstairs.
Oh, you're on Downton Abbey this week? That's
yeah.
fun.
Oh, yeah,
and every Jane Eyre adaptation that's on the BBC.
I'm solving a murder with a priest.
I'm on Broadchurch. I'm doing Doctor Who.
Yeah. Everyone's got to do Doctor Who. I haven't done it.
You haven't done it yet?
No, never done it. But I have worked with David Tennant, who was like the Doctor Who for a long time. And he's lovely. And I was like, I really want to do that show.
Yeah, I'm wearing
just because you have to.
TARDIS shirt.
Yeah, it's a good
I mean,
one.
It's
is it from like, when's that? Is that like a 70s shirt? I love it.
Nah, someone just mashed up the NASA logo with the TARDIS
but
on
it. But it looks like you've got like a vintage t-shirt on.
Yeah, I know. It's cool. It's deceptive.
Well, it's also been washed a shit ton. You've had
I've worn it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good that you do your own washing, you know, that you wash your shirts.
Well, we didn't say that.
A person comes in. I have very long days, Matt.
I get it. I'm not complaining.
I'm gone most weekends.
Someone does my laundry, and I have the shortest days.
Who does your laundry?
The lovely lady who cleans my house.
But does she come once a week?
Yeah.
So that means you only do laundry once a week.
Oh, I've gone, before I used to go 30 days or so without doing laundry.
How do you do that?
I have that many clothes.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. You've got to keep buying new clothes,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
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 Or new underwear at least.
No, there's been plenty of times.
Have you done the thing where you turn your underwear inside out? Because you're
No.
I've got to do it.
When I was younger, of course.
I have before. No. I mean, sometimes you're like, you didn't pack enough knickers or whatever, and you're like, it's got to be done.
Yeah. Well, when I was younger, I would do that. Now I would just go buy new underwear and just...
All right, well, maybe we don't all make as much money as you, Chris.
True.
Well, his underwear is expensive.
The people that I pay to place me into my underwear...
to place me into it.
You should never... Your underwear should never have the new creases in them because you just bought it at the store and put it directly on your body. Like, I always kind of wonder, like... Well, I hope this was not on another person before I put this on. Let's roll the dice and see how we do. But when I wasn't so busy, I actually kind of liked doing laundry because there's something very the folding is very therapeutic.
It's the only like chore I actually like to do is laundry. I don't like washing up. I'm vacuuming. I'm rubbish at all those things. But like laundry, I kind of like doing. I like putting it in and getting it out. It's all clean. Hanging it out or like.
I like dishes.
Like sorting
I like
through
doing
it.
Dishes.
You like doing dishes?
Yeah.
But like sticking them in a dishwasher or
no,
like doing them?
Like doing them.
Oh, I don't.
Especially if there's a ton of them.
Do you wear marigolds, like gloves?
No. My fiance does, but I don't care for my hands that much. The other day I was doing the dishes and I went to grab a fucking mason jar that was on the side of the sink that was falling in and I grabbed it a split second too late and sliced my finger open.
Aw, buddy.
Yeah, I
see,
know.
It can be that's dangerous. Fucking, that's why I don't wash up.
It's my
you know?
Guitar hand, too.
If you wash up, you're going to get critically injured.
I just can't risk it. My hands are very important for the show.
No, I get it.
Talking of that, look at this here. So I got stung by this crazy caterpillar in Louisiana. This is over a month ago, but it's still healing. And we had to like send me to the hospital, but I put my hand on a tree in a scene. So I was like, and then I was like, I tried to carry on with the scene, but my hand was like on fire. Like I'd stuck it on like a hot skillet. And it was this this crazy caterpillar that they have in Louisiana that has these like poisonous venom like spikes all over it to protect itself. And I had like an allergic reaction to it and stuff, but it's still healing.
And no one would warn you? Okay, if you're going to shoot in Shreveport, don't touch the spiny caterpillars.
Well, everyone's too worried about the snakes. So none of us are worried about – we didn't realize how bad these caterpillars were. So I was like, I felt kind of embarrassed. I was like, hey, I feel kind of embarrassed that I'm going because I got stung by a caterpillar. But then apparently one of the grips, and they're like the toughest guys on set, cried when he got stung by one like 2 days before and went to hospital. So I was like, oh, I'm all right then. I didn't cry.
It wasn't like this little wiener over here. I was like, they're crying.
Oh, I'll cry all the time. I don't care.
Cry right now.
Do it. No, don't do it. I don't want to. No, please. It's like watching your uncle cry. It's weird.
It's you know, your dad and I.
Oh, my dad was a crier. Like my dad, anything in a movie or television show that was even of moderate emotional gravity, and not even that. I mean, you know, he you would just all of a sudden hear like he was very vocal about it.
He'd
like,
be he devastated.
Are you a crier?
These.
Nah, not. I mean, I guess it depends. Yeah, I mean, it's, well.
When was the last time you cried?
I don't remember. It hasn't been this year. But
I don't even know either.
I guess it was probably, I don't know, I guess it probably after my last breakup.
That is nuts to me that you haven't cried this year.
I don't think I have.
I don't think I have either.
I mean, I cry at least a couple of times a week. It's, sometimes just when a song comes on the radio that I like.
You know, I think that would be great because that's very cathartic.
Yeah, it's good to have a good cry.
Oh, I cried the other day. I was slicing onions for a long period of time.
Yeah, that counts.
That doesn't.
Does it count?
I don't think it does count.
No, it counts because like just like I had a knife in my hand and I was just like the water was just coming down my face, and then the doorbell rang and it was the delivery guy trying to. And he's like, "I'm sorry, we need a signature," and I'm just like. Just
one face. A signature.
Like I can't sign for this.
Do you think it looked like
those are my mother's
someone.
Ashes?
That's right. Yeah, it was. I think it was probably. You know, maybe there. I'm sure. You know, there must have been something this year at some point that I watched that unlocked. You know, there was an episode of Game of Thrones that almost undid me. from this past season, which I just watched about a month ago. Not the current season, but the previous season. And it wasn't that it was sad. Joffrey. It was so, what?
Joffrey died.
Yeah, I was so really sorry you. To see really him go. You. No, but do you watch it?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't either.
All right. Well, then it's not going
to
make any
but
sense.
But people are obsessed with it. When people start talking about it, I don't watch it, but I'm like, I'm very respectful. It's like, to me, it's like some kind of religion. I'm like, oh, I get it. You're really into that show. People are like, they take it very seriously. Like, they have Game of Thrones nights, and it's like.
It's what do you deal. Watch?
I like Orange is the New Black.
Uh-huh.
I like House of Cards. I love Breaking Bad.
Just whatever you can get on Netflix, essentially, is what you watch.
Basically. Yeah. The Comeback was like my favorite show.
Comeback
all
was
through,
so
like,
good.
Yeah, it was so good.
So good.
And I watched both seasons back to back, though, and you're like, it's crazy. They were shot like, how long was there between them? It was like
10 years.
10 years.
Oh, wow. That
yeah, the original Comeback was in 2004, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love Silicon Valley, which my friend TJ's on.
How do you know TJ?
We did a movie together.
What did you do with TJ?
We did Our Idiot Brother with Paul Rudd.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love TJ. He's one of my favorite. I mean, he's crazy. Yes. You know, he just won an award as well.
He won the Critics' Choice Award.
Funny.
Yeah.
I try and see his stand-up as well because I kind of love stand-up, but I could never do it, but I like get really scared for them. You know what
you get
I mean?
Scared
like,
for them.
I do
That's
because it's
fantastic.
Like you've got to make people laugh, and if you don't, I couldn't think of anything worse than being stood there. Like I can't deliver a joke either. Like I'm terrible. Like even if someone would give me good material, my delivery would be crap. But he's so good at it, and he like feeds off it. I just enjoy watching it.
Yeah, he's TJ's a button pusher.
Yeah, totally.
He loves to fuck with people.
Oh yeah.
And also such a sweet guy. I mean, we're all part of the same. TJ was a Chicago comic that came over, but we're all in the same. And now, you know, it's just fun to watch your friends start to like, oh, everyone's starting to realize that you're funny, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you see it because I've known him now for when I lived out here, I was, I guess, 24, 25. So I've known him for like 5 years. And it's nice because even when I was living back in England, we've stayed in contact. And like when he got Silicon Valley and just like kind of seeing it all happen, and he sold a show to HBO as well, like that he's producing. He's just one of those people that I'm like, he believes in himself so much and he makes stuff happen that I'm like, he's just going to keep flying.
He's great.
And he's also, with TJ, I can never tell, even as well as I know him, like I can never tell when he's fucking with me or when he's being. I got a text from him once. Like 2 years ago, he was like, I'm dating this Republican girl who loves guns. And I'm like, why would you text me that for no reason? He sent me a picture of this girl holding this huge gun. And I'm like, is this a meme or a joke? Or are you, I don't know how to respond.
I would say he's always joking. Always. And then because I feel like that's like he lives his life like that. Like he's just wants to make, he loves making people laugh.
Yeah. You should come to our meltdowns. I own a comedy theater.
Oh yeah, I'd love to come.
At Meltdown, and it's all that's all the Kumail.
He leases it from the Queen.
I lease it from the Queen.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
For 100 years.
She's real tough.
The Queen.
She demands her rent.
Queen Gaston.
But there's a ton of great, and if you live in the center of town, it's right. It's on Sunset between La Brea and Fairfax. It's like right at Meltdown Comics.
Yeah,
big comic
I'm store. Like I'm just staying like south of that, like near a. Like
I wouldn't
third.
Say.
Near a third, but okay. not on third, but just near there. So near you might see me walking around there.
Anyone who wants to drop by, it's unit number 4. I love a potluck. Bring me stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to come.
Yeah, it's fun. There's a lot of good.
Is it like every night? Do you what are you like?
We have seven nights a week of shows. The Wednesday night stand-up shows is really fun. Kumail, who's on Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Co-hosts it with the other guy who's usually on the podcast with us, Jonah, and it's really good. It's just a good room, and it feels like you're in someone's basement, so it feels a little dirty and fun. And
yeah, that's good.
It's good. You know, it's a comic book shop with a comedy stage in it, so it's kind of weird and fun.
When I did this movie with TJ, we were in we were at Sundance. Is Utah? Is that where Sundance is? And he was like, I'm going to do a show tonight. Will you come? And there was maybe like 3 people there. And me and my friend. And it was the first time I'd actually ever seen his stand-up as well. And he was so amazing. But the fact that he kind of hustles and still goes, even when he'll go to different places, even if there's like he's performing for 2 or 3 people, he still does it like full out.
Yeah, you gotta. You have to.
I kind of love that.
Yeah.
Well, I love the life of a comedian.
Well, a lot of us started in rooms where, you know, for the first couple years, you might, even if there are people in the room, they're all comedians. They're other comedians. Mm-hmm. And if they're not other comedians, then it's like three or four people.
Then they're lunatics.
In some cases, they are.
Yeah.
You know, there was a show in L.A. for a long time at a laundromat. Mm. And so, you know, like you'd perform next to people folding their laundry. But what's great about it is that if you can figure out how to thrive in those environments, then it kind of makes the rest of it like
easy.
Eh, it's not so bad.
Yeah. Who's your favorite comedian?
Of all time?
Well, like who do you... Oh, let's just say like currently.
I like Bill Burr. There's a guy named Bill Burr.
Yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Bill Burr's great. Dave Attell's great. Chappelle's great. There's a guy named Hannibal Buress who's really funny. Natasha Leggero, Maria Bamford, Kyle Kinane.
I went to TJ's 30th birthday. He had like the roast of TJ Miller, and she performed, and Natasha did, and she was great.
She's
very funny.
Yeah, she's really funny.
And she's kind of like tiny and like fiery, and you don't expect her to kind of come out with the things that she comes out with. Yeah. I enjoyed her.
Yeah, so there's a lot of really great... It's a really good time for comedy right now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really great people who are just starting to pop. And you know, there was a not to bore you about the history of comedy, but there was kind of a dead space for a long time because there was a big comedy boom in the 80s and the early 90s, and then after that people got sick of it. And so there weren't like stand-up specials on television anymore.
Yeah. And who doesn't like to laugh? It's weird that comedy would ever go out of fashion.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I think most people think that comedy is all one thing. But comedy is diverse in the way that music is diverse. And so I think what happens is people go, I'm going to go out to see comedy. But you wouldn't say, I'm just going to go see music, and then get mad if you're seeing a country band but you want hip hop.
Yes.
So I think because, you know, our culture has been so carefully divided into niche chunks, people expect their very specific tastes to be met. And I feel like part of the problem of the sort of the splintering of our culture through, you know, the internet and a million cable channels are that most people don't feel like they have to come together anymore to really watch one. You know, there aren't a lot of things that everyone watches anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people watch Walking Dead, they watch Game of Thrones, and there's a couple comedians. Everyone knows Louis C.K. and, you know, but underneath that, there's, you know, thousands and thousands of other things that are just...
Do you find also it's sort of like music comedy in one way where things go in and out of fashion very quickly? Like Austin Powers was like huge, and now it's like, now it's just, you watch it and you're like, how was this ever like as funny as I thought it was, or whatever. Well, you know what I mean? It goes in and out of fashion so quickly. I feel like there's like 5 years like for a comedy like actor in movies, and then it kind of it goes on to something else.
I think it's because comedy is a... jokes are like magic tricks, because you're basically, you know, you're surprising someone. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to reveal some sort of a shared truth that everyone has. Now, this is going to sound like a fucking asshole, but you're trying to reveal some sort of shared truth that everyone has, or maybe didn't know that they knew. But you're also kind of surprising them or shocking them. And it's sort of like a magic trick. Once you see the magic trick, you can't watch the same magic trick for 5 years. Once you see it, you're like, oh, yeah. People can listen to songs over and over again, but they can't listen to the same jokes over and over again because they know where it's going.
But that's what's so crazy for a comedian as well, is that you have to keep coming up with new material.
Yes.
It's like you might have like a great set, but once it's done, it's like, well, you've got to come up with another one. You know, you can't just keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, but that's what keeps it fresh. You wouldn't want to do the same thing. I mean,
but like, who can keep thinking of funny things like that?
You just have to. You have to stop.
Yeah.
You know, or you just stop.
It always impresses me. I just find it like, I find it the hardest sort of art form that there is.
To me, I think acting is hard because I...
Nah, it's easy.
No, but just like taking someone else's words and then you're stuck to it and you can't be elastic with it. And, you know,
brain surgery is hard.
Brain surgery.
No, that's not really very hard either.
I feel like
acting's much harder than brain surgery.
Make one wrong move.
Acting and stand-up are the hardest things to do in the world, period. No, but I'm always...
Pediatric surgery is probably pretty hard, you know.
Once you get the hang of it, though, it's pretty...
Honestly, manual labor would be hard for me. I feel like anything kind of like a building a house or something, I think it's all relative, right?
Yeah, of course. And the truth of the matter is...
Brain surgery easy, though.
Very
easy one, dude.
Sure. No, I get it.
The truth of the matter is human beings are very adaptive, and if someone told you, like... You have to figure out how to build this house or you will die. You would figure it out.
Sure. I mean, it wouldn't be very good. I wouldn't want to live in it afterwards.
No one said it had to be good or livable at all. But it's just like the dog, you know? Like, before the dog, you were like, oh, I couldn't have a dog. And now you have a dog. And it's you're adapted to it. And it totally works.
Yeah.
What type of movies do you like? Do you like horror or sci-fi? Or do you like drama?
I mean, I'm a big Coen Brothers fan.
Sure.
I like comedies, but like sort of based in a drama. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think the Coen Brothers do that so well because I find myself laughing at stuff and it's sort of bizarre, but you feel it's not like a ba-dum-tsh comedy.
Right.
But I also love those as well. I do tend to watch a lot of comedies. One of my favorite movies is Death Becomes Her.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a great movie. And Meryl Streep, I mean, I love her in serious movies, but like in comedy, I think she's like... one of the funniest women.
But see, that's one of those movies that I feel like it didn't... I think that movie holds up. Like, there's a handful of comedies that totally hold up.
And it's kind of amazing, like, the way her neck goes through and the hole in her stomach, it doesn't look ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're like, how did they do that then? It was kind of ahead of its time.
Yeah, well, they did really... Was that mostly practical effects, or did they did some...
I think there was some green screen happening there, but yeah, a lot of practical effects.
Is that what you want to? I mean, do you audition for comedy stuff ever? Or are your agents like, no, you?
Yeah, I do. I'm not so much like American comedy stuff because I'm English, and I feel like with like sitcoms or things like that, there's no way I could do it because I'm not American. Like, I can do an American accent, but the rhythm of like the comedy timing, I think I would find difficult. I feel like with comedy, I'd be able to do it like an English accent or like what I find funny, but I can't do like the American sitcom thing.
So yeah, so you know, so many British actors are coming here and taking jabs away from American.
We've been told to by the Queen. So we're trying to get America back, and we're starting with the entertainment industry.
They're just like getting us back for Bridget Jones.
It's true. It's true. How did she get that job? There was Kate Winslet. She's really English.
I have no idea how she got that job.
She was great.
She was
in
great
that
in it. But
yeah.
Also, you just it kind of goes like. Wow.
I do feel like a lot of American actors can do great British accents, but there's no opportunity for them to do it because it's like, well, make any movies. And
with
we've
the exception
got a ton
of
British. Yeah.
On Game of Thrones, that's pretty much it.
I hope it comes out one day that Ralph Fiennes is from Kentucky.
That would be amazing.
The biggest secret in Hollywood.
Yeah, it was Ralph Fiennes. He changed his name to Rafe. Well, because on, you know, of course, on pretty much everyone's British on Walking Dead.
Yeah.
You know, like all
Andrew Lincoln and who else is on the show?
Oh, David Morrissey is on the show.
He
was British, and
he's
Lauren Cohan is British, and she's on the show. And but I think the leap from British to Southern accent is a little bit.
It's easier, apparently.
A little bit different, yeah.
Well, I got told it was easier because the Southern accent is the only one that's sing-song in the same way that a British accent is. Like, it has more variation, and it has, like, a sing-song effect, like in apparently an English accent does.
Right.
So it's easy. The intonation of how you're saying things is similar.
Right.
The Southern one, the rhythm.
If you guys want to kill these walkers, we're going to have to get together. I mean, like, it is very... but then I feel like the standard American accent... which is just sort of doesn't really have a regional affectation. I feel like that one's hard for people to do.
Yeah, there's definitely certain words that like will throw you off. Like process, and it's like process, right?
It's ours too. If you watch the first season of House, and Hugh Laurie is a fucking amazing actor, but the first season, a lot of his R's go up at the end, and then it changed. It like season two, he worked on it.
Well, it's the hardest.
Well,
when
you know,
he's
not working on it. Liam Neeson.
He's no,
just
he's not at all.
His version.
He's always Irish. He's like, I'm always Irish, even when I'm a CIA person who's trying to find my daughter. I'm still going to be Irish.
I'm just a simple man from Des Moines. No, you're not at all.
That's the thing too, like Pierce Brosnan in the last James Bond movie he did, he just fucking no attempt at an English accent. He was just full Irish in that movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, that's why it's interesting. It's you know, if you watch Tennant on Doctor Who, but then you hear his actual accent is very Scottish.
Yeah,
and it's almost off-putting to hear the disparity between that.
Yeah, I know what you mean actually, and I feel like there's a when you do an American accent on a TV show, you're working, you're doing like 8 pages a day. You don't get to work on it. Like if you're doing a movie, you're like, well, this is everything I'm saying in the movie and I can go through it with a dialect coach and make sure it's like I'm on it. But with TV, it's just not like that. So I feel like I don't know how anyone would stay in another accent and not mess up at all. You just got to rely on like the ADR so you can like correct things.
What is your standard? I want to hear your standard American accent now. So okay. If we're just having like a regular conversation. So did you, have you been to the Grove yet?
Yeah, I've been to the Grove.
And what's your favorite, what do you like to do with the Grove?
I really like J. Crew because we so have good. That in England and it's so expensive compared to here. Like it's cheaper here. It's like the only thing I think that's cheaper here.
The Gap's probably cheaper here too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the Gap always have like 70% off. Yeah. Every time you go in there, you're like, how is there another clearance?
So are you going to get an Apple Watch? Have you been to the Apple store yet?
No. No, is that an Apple Watch?
Yeah.
What does it do?
It does a lot of really fun things. There's apps on it, and it's got a little animated, you know, like this little animated Mickey face on it.
How much do you use it, though? Because I would think that I would just use my phone. Because this is more finangly than just going like this.
You think that, but it actually does. Tell me, I use mine a lot.
Do you use back to a regular watch.
You are? Why'd you go back to the regular watch?
He hated it.
I just was like, today I was like, I have these expensive watches that just sit. Because of this dumb thing that literally...
All that Omega watch does is tell time just because James Bond had one.
No, this is the NASA qualified. This is the first watch on the moon. But it, all the Apple Watch
that
does is save me
that was the first watch on the moon?
Not literally, but it was the same kind.
Okay, I was like, wow. You really dressed up.
Guys, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm a billionaire. I've also purchased the moon.
I was not aware of that. I'm still delighted that you're still in the.
Oh, shall I come?
No, keep doing it. Keep doing it. I love it. Have you been to Santa Monica?
Yeah, I've been to Santa Monica. Yeah.
Do you like the beach?
No.
No.
No. I don't really go to the beach. But I grew up near the beach.
Sure.
Really?
Yeah, one of the nicest beaches in England, and so I don't. I just kind of like, I live like 10 minutes from it in England. I don't like the sun. I do not like
the
sun.
Yeah, but the nicest beach in England is like the most delicious thing on the Pizza Hut menu.
Hey, man. You might want to take off your fancy watch right now.
Janet, describe your perfect Sunday.
My perfect Sunday?
Mm-hmm. What's your perfect Sunday?
Okay. I probably sleep until like midday.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go to the griddle and get some pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go home and I'd like watch some TV, maybe see some friends, like maybe have a little smoke, chill out, relax, you know, be in my pajamas all day. That would be my perfect Sunday.
That's a good Sunday.
My favorite thing about your accent, which is great, by the way, is that there's an automatic character associated.
That, and I can't help that because when I worked as a nanny and I used to do this thing where because I kind of get bored, I think, sometimes. And she was a lot of fun. The girl that I looked after, she was like 5. And I would have this this Jasmine character. And I'd be like, so I'm not picking you up tomorrow, but Jasmine, my friend from America, is coming. But Jasmine was like evil. She like wouldn't help with homework. She would like, she'd make her eat all the broccoli. She was like really strict. But I would like do it for like the whole day. I'd be like, hi, I'm Jasmine, Janet's friend, picking you up from school. Except for the other mom. I wouldn't want to do it in front of them because I'd be embarrassed. But with kids, it's fine. No, they think I was cuckoo otherwise.
That's amazing. Were you ever worried, like, what if your personality, what if you get stuck in Jasmine and your personality splits?
Well, she'd always be like, I want Janet back now. And I was like, well, I'll call her, but, you know, you said you wanted Jasmine a day. So then I'd come back in the room and be like, hey, I'm back. Jasmine told me it didn't work out. I think I'm just illustrating that I'm completely nuts right now.
Free spirit.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, free spirit. That's how I like to go. That's what I like to say. No. No medication for a free spirit, right?
Completely nuts would be if you were talking in that voice and I was like, oh, that's a really great accent. And you were legitimately like, what accent? And then you were just frozen.
I was like Daniel Day-Lewis. I was like becoming it.
On set, everyone has to acknowledge you as a witch. As having made a sacred pact.
I mean, quite a lot on set, they do compare me to Daniel Day-Lewis, which, you know. I'm like, fine, yeah, I'm pretty in it, guys.
I get it. Yeah, I get it.
I get the similarities. I mean, yeah. We're both all right actors.
What if Jasmine is real and Janet is the made-up character?
Well, I could never have grown up in England. I could have just been making that up.
We don't
really,
know.
From America. And this is like just to make me seem smarter because I can say really stupid things, but people think I'm much smarter.
Yeah.
Because of the accent.
Yeah.
Thank
Ralph
God
syndrome.
For the accent. I've always got that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you said like, If you started describing creationism in a British accent, people would be like, it sounds authoritative.
Sure. What's creationism?
Well, that's it. See, it still sounds smart in your accent.
So you're like, oh, she must know.
Of course she knows. Yeah, exactly, Janet. What is creationism? Like, philosophically, what is... we've kept you here for over an hour. I don't want to ransack your whole day.
What does Gary say?
Yeah, we should wrap up soon.
Gary wouldn't have said that if I hadn't brought it up.
Gary's the boss of me.
Do you guys have are you on any sort of press tour right now?
No, I mean, I finished shooting, so now I'm like available like for things, and we're doing, what are we doing? Extra. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm doing extra.
Do it all this Jasmine.
Oh, you're heading to the Universal City Walk?
Is it City Walk or is it at the Grove? City Which Walk. One's at the Grove?
City Walk. Grove's gone. They don't do it there anymore. They moved to City
Oh, they
Walk.
Did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I had stopped going to the Grove for a while. Because they have these guys run around at the Grove.
Do you get papped?
Yeah. And I'm uncomfortable. I don't know how to...
Well, it's all right if you know you're going somewhere to get pat, like if you're doing something for like to promote your show or something. But if you're just like shopping at the Grove,
well, if I'm just going to get like a USB cable or an HDMI cable at the Apple Store, I don't.
Well, go to the.
You don't want to be like,
hey,
yeah.
I don't want to get a wardrobe stylist just so I can go buy a fucking
and then they'll just,
charging cable.
Then they'll just out of nowhere go, Chris, what do you think about Caitlyn Jenner? You just start screaming.
Please don't.
Curled up in the fetal position in front of Forever 21.
This is how they get you. That's why. Yeah, it's very. Do they do that to you?
No. No, I mean, only when like I'm something for an event. I mean, in Shreveport, there's like a lot of people who like, obviously they know that we're the show that's shooting there. So I get like people come up to me and talk to me there, but not really. I don't think I'm easily recognizable. People often think that they know me or that I've gone into this shop before or whatever. They're like, have you been in here before? You've been in here. You were in here yesterday. I'm like, no. They don't know where they know me from.
Do you know what? That's a precursor to everyone knowing who you are.
But I love this part. I don't want to get to the next part. I couldn't think of any. I do sometimes feel like people are looking at me a lot, but sometimes that just feeds my ego. I'm like, I guess I'm good today.
Also, you know, you were on billboards all over the city too.
Yeah, no, I heard about it, but I didn't really. I saw like maybe I came for some press and I saw like one or two.
Just because
of them.
You didn't see them doesn't mean they weren't there.
Yeah, it's true.
But you don't look. I didn't look at it and think there I am. I was like, they did a good job making me look really good on that billboard. No one's gonna recognize me.
But Salem is a really fun show, and I think I've been telling people to watch it for a while now, and I get blots of time to because I have to batch watch everything. But you know, the part of the thing that's really annoying is that because I travel out of town every weekend to go do stand up, and you would think, well, I'm on planes and hotel rooms, I could watch stuff there. But the internet service is so bad on planes and in hotel rooms that I can't.
You can't
by the way, I'm not
stuff.
I'm
hotel
not
hotel rooms. It's not bad.
I've been having a run of really bad.
Yeah.
And I had to call. This is boring. I had to call tech support at a hotel I was staying at, and the guy was like, "Are there 3,000 people staying in your hotel?" And I said, "I don't know, but probably not." And basically, the internet was being sandbagged by the fact that it still the server thought it still had 3,000 open connections, and so it just I've been getting a lot of that lately, and so things will start to load, and then I'll just go back and try to watch them later, but then it's reset, so then I have to start over. Yeah. You know, especially if I'm streaming stuff. So.
But sometimes in hotels, there's like a free internet service, and then there's like a premium one. You're like, who wants to pay for it? That annoys me though, but you have to because otherwise you can't even like check your emails. You're like, this free one is.
Yeah, and they tell you in the you can get the regular one, which is good for checking emails and looking at text-based things, and the other one's like everything that you want to do. It's like here you can watch video and stream music.
$25 a day. You're like, this seems a little steep to
make
be honest.
New friends. Yeah, I know, and it really because it does not cost that much to connect to the internet.
Not at all.
No, it's such a fucking scam.
The other thing that's a scam is like the valet parking when you stay in a hotel. When you've like paid for your hotel room, and you're paying like a fortune, and then like yeah, it's $30 to park your car,
night.
And there's nowhere else
at
you
least.
Can park your car, and you got to tip the fuckers as well.
Oh, it's not really a British thing. They, I found, I will tell
sorry,
you.
Sorry, not the fuckers, but you know what I'm saying.
No, those fuckers.
Those hardworking valet fuckers.
Those pieces of
give,
shit with
that
dreams.
I give $2 to when they bring my car.
But they, I can tell you from experience that the shittier the hotel, the actually the better and cheaper the internet service is, because they have to try harder.
Ah, that's good. That's
right?
Good,
you know, like a really nice hotel is like dating a really attractive person where they don't really feel like they have to put in as much effort because they're hot and they already win.
Yeah.
And so you are gonna...
And they have free champagne at sundown.
Yeah, yeah. but in general, like, that's where you'll see more add-ons at the nicer hotels, because they know their clientele can afford it, and also because it's exclusionary. So you know, if you want good free internet, you could stay at a Hampton Inn or like a Holiday Inn Express.
You know where it does free breakfast that's a nice hotel? And I'm a big fan of that. You can just go and have breakfast. It's the London Hotel, and you can call London for free.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I didn't know you could
like
do that.
That's like part of their like thing. You can call any
Gordon
London
Ramsay
number for
restaurant's
free.
Gone now in there, so I have no reason to go.
In L.A.?
Yeah, the London.
Why'd they get rid of it?
The restaurant lease came up, and then the London was like, eh.
What did they put in there?
I think they are running the restaurant now. Whatever that space is going to still be a restaurant, but it's going to be run
by the
hotel.
In this one, and I've stayed in New York one a lot. I like the London.
Yeah, the one in Midtown, the one in New York. Yeah, like I think I stayed there for an Upfronts or something.
5th or something. 35th or 26th. I feel like it's like between where the guitars are.
I was like,
negotiate the city.
Like
Music Row, you know.
I just realized, I don't know why, this is going back to a much earlier thing, and then I'll let you get out of here. I just realized that I think part of the reason why I haven't had a good cry this year is because I've been specifically avoiding watching really dramatic things that are upsetting.
Oh, maybe you should change that. Have a cry tonight and take a selfie and post it.
What am I supposed to...
Watch 12 Years a Slave tonight and tell me you didn't cry.
All right. Hey, Shannon, it's Chris. I'm having a hard time over here.
It's kind of a rough.
Yeah, really long. I'll put it on Instagram.
Beautiful.
Where can people find you on the on Twitter and are you in Instagram?
Yes. Yeah. Just I guess you just type in my name, right? I'm not very tech savvy.
Well, what's your Twitter handle?
It's such a sit. My Twitter handle is at @JayrMonty.
Okay.
Because I couldn't get my
name. I mean,
name,
I know I'm following you, so I know.
It.
I know.
And then my Instagram is so random. It's like, because I didn't know that like what I typed in as my username was going to be like my handle. It's at Fannex17, FANNEX17. It was the printer like cartridge thing that was next to me when I came up with it. And I used it. And now people are like what is it? Like, is it just your name? And I'm like, oh, it's Fannex17. And they're like, why? I'm like, long story, not really.
Because it almost sounds like Fanny, which means something different than it does here.
Well, here it means bum,
yeah.
And it means vagina.
It means
England.
Vagina in England and Australia.
You can say vagina.
You could say pussy if you wanted to. Like, you could say whatever you want.
There's cunt.
You could say cunt too. Mm-hmm. You can drop the C bomb. Sounds so much better with your accent. Okay. Just before you leave, drop the C bomb as Janet and then as Jasmine. And I promise you, okay. Anyone listening, it will be infinitely more jarring as Jasmine.
Okay, Janet thinks you're a cunt. Jasmine thinks you're a cunt.
This is so jarring with an American accent. So I'm so jealous of British people.
Is that because you think you like have like you don't pronounce your T's in the same way? So cunt, when I say cunt, I like do a T. Whereas when you say cunt, do you like kind of shut it off?
You shut it off, and I think what you're hearing is that you know, English being descended from a Germanic, you know, we're part of the Germanic language tree, and then also the American accent was. You know, the people that fled England went we're like Dutch, basically. Mm-hmm. We're a lot of Dutch. And I think so we have more of a hard, like our language sounds a little harder on the edges. And so I think that's probably why when you say cunt, like it just sounds like cunt, you know, like it just sounds so.
Sound like Hitler then.
Cunt! Why do people keep saying that to me? No, I'm kidding.
Well, I think mostly it's your recent thoughts on the Jews, Chris.
No, that is not. I didn't say anything.
That's why people keep saying
no,
you
Matt,
sound.
You're just making that up.
No.
I did just go to Austria, and I did try to speak. I did try to speak German so that I wasn't just like another American expecting everyone to bend to my customs. And I did.
Do they not speak Austrian there?
They speak German.
Oh, do they?
They're German. Yeah, Austrian is it's a German speaking.
I've never been, but I didn't know they spoke German there.
Amazing.
I've heard it's beautiful. I'd love to go.
It's the most stunning. Oh my God, it was incredible. But to me, you know, even in German, The one phrase that I would say over and over again, I would say, Es tut mir leid, ich kann keine Sprache Deutsch, which means like, I don't speak German. But everything in German sounds like you should be pounding your fist and going, why did you leave the milk on the counter? Like, it's like German is like scolding.
No, and you feel like everyone's telling you off. Like, you call up for more towels in a hotel room in like Berlin and you're like, oh, right. Like, they're like, nine. Okay, jeez.
No, I don't need nine towels, just one. Come on, dude.
That's why the Daleks talk like this. Because they were offshoots of the Germans.
Germans, yeah.
Everyone talks like this.
Nazis.
Stephen Moffat, you must put Janet Montgomery on an episode of Doctor Who.
I don't think we should start talking about Nazis. You should
someday.
So you find out that I love Nazis. I don't. It's my one weakness.
I love kids and puppies and Sundays, Nazis.
And Nazi memorabilia.
Grape juice. Like, and it's just like, whoa, what? That's like, there's an old Kids in the Hall sketch that's like, it's like career-ending moments. And one of the kids in the hall, it was a sketch troupe, and he's accepting an award. Oh, I'd like to thank, you know, my family and all my friends and my agent and Hitler and all the kids. It just skates right over it. But it was wonderful to meet you in person.
And thank you too.
I know I started harassing you on Twitter to get you on the podcast months ago. So thank you for.
Oh, no. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that we worked it out, because months ago I was still like in Shreveport and I was like, oh, I don't think I get to go. But then.
But it all worked out.
And
I was a little nervous meeting you because I'm a big fan of your show. So I was a little flustered.
I was nervous because I get nervous that I'm just going to say something stupid, like, you know, I love Nazis or something
no,
like that.
No one would say that.
I mean, why would that come out of my mouth? I get nervous.
Yeah, who would say that? You could see a clip on TMZ. That's where you got to be careful. You know, if you have a fucked up sense of humor, it's a dangerous business more famous you get, because you could just say stuff and then people clip and you go, no, I can't, I'm not.
But the other option is you lose your personality and your humor because you're so frightened to say anything, and then you just come across like an idiot.
Right.
So it's like, you know what? I'm just going to have to accept that I'm part of my like charm and humor comes from being slightly offensive sometimes.
Which, by the way, again, because you have the British accent, makes it way more palatable. So you're going
to
be fine.
It's good to know. Yeah, I'm keep hold of this one then. No Janet. More Jasmine.
Janet Montgomery. How many people have brought up the connection between your last name and the other?
Elizabeth Montgomery.
Right.
Too many.
Well, I wasn't going to.
Good.
If that's what you were worried about.
I mean, she's kind of like the most famous TV witch ever as well.
Yeah, but it was a different time.
And I can't do that thing that she did with her nose. How the... did she do
I
that?
I don't know.
So who can tons isolate of
coke.
Their nose?
Tons of coke.
Do you think that was part of the audition process as well? They were like, can you move your nose without moving any other parts of your face?
Yeah, you know, I just like to imagine that she and the whole, they were just doing tons of coke, tons of lime, and they like, she was trying to get it off the tip of her nose. Like, do that. Yeah. I think it'd be really funny if you took all the witchcraft out of Bewitched and just made it seem like she was a cokehead that this guy was living with. She's like, I'll just pop over to another state. And then she wiggles her nose, but then nothing happens and everyone's got to pretend like, okay.
I'm sure there's some kind of technology where you could take an episode of Bewitched and make it like that. You could have her doing cocaine and use like the images and get her to manipulate it to do other things.
Yeah, that is cool. Basically the whole series is about this advertising executive who has to manage his wife with a severe personality disorder.
Yes.
That would be amazing. And that the whole story is told from, in her mind, what she thinks is happening. But if you were actually to see the reality of what was happening, there was no, like, her mother actually was dead, and that's why you always see her hovering in the back of the room, like, in her head. She's always...
Yeah. You've got to make this happen.
Yeah.
Can you do it?
I can do that now. I'll do that. But such a pleasure to talk to you. So thank you so
you
much.
Too. Thanks so much.
Yes, of course. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.